This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, April 1st, 2009.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'd like to open our meeting. Thanks for coming to today's meeting, Wednesday, April 1st, 2009. I suggest everybody read the news edition of Paul Frank called Law Frank, with some interesting highlights of what's going on around campus. And I ask, at this time, I ask if there are any late additions to our agenda. Okay, with that, we'll move on. Our employee elected trustee, Beth McKinney, cannot make it today. We're passing her report. And is our SA representative here?
I didn't receive any report.
Okay. Report from our UA representative?
Nothing to report.
Thank you, Bill. We did hear from Alan. Alan, unfortunately, isn't going to be able to make it to today's meeting either. He has nothing to report regarding his representation on the Faculty Senate. We'll move on to our report from the Staff Climate Survey Steering Committee.
The next meeting is tomorrow, so I have a report for the next EA meeting. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. We'll move on to a report from the chair. The semester is winding down quickly. We have an exciting time in the EA's annual rituals, and that is our elections and the possibility of having new members on the employee assembly and former members stepping down and moving on. And I'd like anyone here, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us where you're from. I know we have Linda Kroll over there.
Hi. Linda Kroll Howell. I currently work with CIC.
And Linda is one of our applicants. To join the employee assembly.
Hi, I'm Tanya Grove with Theater, Film, and Dance. And I'm currently.
Yes, she is.
I'm Tampa Chomcho from Campus Life, Queen of Guiding.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. We have one more over here.
David Brooks from UP. I'm an applicant.
Outstanding. I thank you for coming. For the applicants, this is going to be a normal bi-weekly gathering that you'll get familiar with as we have our regular meetings, and they are open to the public. We like to do our best at spreading the word and getting more people to come. It's a great way of communicating and learning about what's happening on the campus. And this body of governance for employees has a direct communication link with the senior staff. We do meet frequently with our Vice President of Human Resources, Mary Opperman, and President Swarton, as well as others. I have not heard anything regarding the report to the trustees. For our possible new members, once a year, at the end of every spring semester, the trustees are in town, and the chair of the employee assembly is invited to go there and give an annual report. I have not heard exactly when that will be. They have not asked for information yet. But it's a great way, so there's another opportunity for employees here at Cornell to speak and spread information and get information back from our trustees, who are very vital and shaping the path of our university. Does anybody have any questions for me? Anything you want to bring up? Okay, we're going to move on to the approval of our minute meeting from our March 18th meeting. They did go out an email. I'll give everybody a couple minutes to browse them over. And then I'll make a call for a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
Was Pat not able to join us today?
Not able to.
While everyone's looking at that, the meeting minutes, I'd like to speak about business of the day from our March 18th meeting. For those of you who don't know, we had an ad hoc charter review committee joined and assembled to go over our charter, which is the rules and procedures of how we go about our business. They worked very hard on this, and they brought it to our body, and we hashed out some details, and we approved with a unanimous vote of 9-0 to accept the charter with the amended changes. And the next step of this charter is to move on and get a referendum by the campus employees. So if you see something that work happens here in the VA, and we all supported it. Ari was a big player in that. Ari is the assistant director of the Office of Assembly. Leon Lawrence, who was at Architecture, Art, and Planning, and then left us and moved on. He was on the committee. Pat Mahoney from Geneva. She's our Geneva representative. And I'll be missing somebody. Who else was working on that? Hazel Hall was for a while.
Peggy Beach.
And Peggy Beach, she's director of the Office of Assembly. Hi, Dennis.
Oh, hi.
Dennis Stein is here. He's our editor of Paw Print. Or Paw Print, we can call it. You threw me off.
He's a blizzard.
You didn't catch me off guard on the...
That's what I heard.
Yeah, you heard that already.
Yeah.
Word spread fast. It's a big thing. Okay, everybody has time to review the meeting minutes for March 18th? Okay. I'd like to get a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I make a motion.
I have a motion.
I'll second.
I have a second. No changes? Anyone notice? Okay, all in favor of approving the March 18th meeting minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? Okay. We'll note that we passed Wednesday, March 18th, 2009 meeting minutes as they are. Thank you. Now we're going to move on to our committee reports. The Employee Assembly has many committees that we're involved in and have to rush report with us. Some of them we have collaboration among other campus partners and groups and organizations that we have representatives sit out at the faculty senate, a group of faculty, and we have a representative that goes there and gets information. But now we have our committees that do have a direct report to this body of employee assembly members, and we start off with our executive committee report. That's made up of myself, our vice chair, Jason Seymour, all the officers of the group. Gary Stewart is our parliamentarian. Alan Mittman is our chair of the finance committee. And the Office of Assembly also joins us. Do you have anything?
I see that. Chair for internal operations.
I forgot Peter. Yeah, he's off. On there.
He's usually really quiet.
You know me.
Sometimes we have to control him.
With change.
Do you have anything from the executive committee?
Bob mentioned something about the election.
That was your fun. Okay. Any questions for the executive group? So there's nothing to report. Okay. We'll move on to the staff recognitions and awards committee. I'm the chairman of. We do have some time because we had a presenter today and the presenter canceled. So I'm going through these the agenda, and I'm explaining it a little as we go for the newcomers so you can understand what we're doing. I'm the chairman of the Staff Recognition and Awards Committee, which is a committee that meets to go over the George Peter Award application. The George Peter Award is named after a former beloved friend and employee, George Peter, who was a huge staff advocate. And he made a lot of great strides and efforts to improve the quality of life of employees at Cornell. We did meet. It was a hybrid of tactics to get this group together. Some of us met face to face, some of us talked through emails, and others did some work on their own. We're waiting on one more member of this committee to get back with us with their votes, and we will be announcing with the behind the scenes work that has to happen first, but we're very close on announcing our two recipients of the George Peter Award for this spring semester. So stay tuned for that, and we'll have more information as that happens. Any questions for that committee? Okay, we'll move on to our communications committee. The chairman of that committee is our vice chair of the Employee Summit, Jason. And Jason, if you just want to explain the committee a little bit and go on with your reports.
So the communications committee is multifaceted in many different aspects of trying to communicate actions that the employee assembly is doing with the employee body and vice versa. Usually they're a committee that kind of gets its tentacles into other committees or is referred to by the entire body as a whole or whenever some type of communication outreach is going on. A couple of standing projects that we're working on is we've had a very busy year, so a lot of the committees haven't worked so much in actual committee work because we're doing a lot of work as the body as a whole. You know, we put on the energy fair, so the communications committee was involved in a lot of the publicizing that to the employee body. We've also had our charter review, which took up a lot of time. But we are working on trying to find a new way to vamp up the website for employee exposure, and we've got representatives on the committee that sit on other campus committees that are looking at employee initiatives such as an employee portal or employee intranet, and we're trying to figure out how the EA would play a part of that. So we do have a lot of different representation communication-wise. We also had talked about doing a survey of the employees, and there is a separate climate survey by the university that's going to be happening later this year, and we were hoping to clump onto that, but we found out that we aren't going to be able to, so that's kind of come back to our committee so that we can survey the employees of what they would like to see from the employee assembly. That's about it. If anyone has any questions?
Thank you, Jason. We'll move on. The next committee report we normally hear from is the Finance Committee, and that's headed up by Alan Mittman, one of our EA members. He cannot be here today. Were there any updates? Does anybody? I know you did meet last Friday about finances. Did he pass anything on to anybody? Okay. What I heard from him was he'll fill us in the next coming weeks. Okay. We also have an emergency grant fund committee, formerly known as the emergency grant fund committee, just recently made some efforts to change the name to the CARE Fund. You may have seen a little bit about it in the press or other correspondence. That's chaired up by Pat Mahoney, who is not with us. A little bit of background about this committee is, I don't know if you've ever been to, once a year in the fall, there's an auction. People donate goods, sweatshirts, art, lunch with President Scorton and his wife, and different things, and employees, faculty, anyone can come, and they bid, and the money that is raised from this auction goes to this fund to help out employees in a time of need. So, for instance, if there's an employee goes through a fire, burns their house down, they can apply, and if approved, they're given an award, a monetary award to help them out through a trouble. This is pretty much the basics of this committee. Is there anything to report from any of the other members?
Nope. Well, I wasn't at the last meeting. I believe it was actually canceled, so I think the last update we had, there's been no update since.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Does CARE stand for anything?
Yes.
Okay. What is it? Thank you. I know, I was going to say.
I
got
the.
Thank you.
It's
aiding and responding to employees.
Aiding and responding to emergencies.
Oh.
Grant. I was reading with interest the Cornell Chronicle article that talked about the hardship fund, because there's that fund out there too. And I know the STIR fund is reevaluating its use or its criteria. And I suggested that the grant or the CARE fund needed an article too. In the Cornell Chronicle to get a little bit more exposure and potentially more people to consider for guests on that. So that's in the works too. Can't hurt. I was actually reading the hardship fund, and I was kind of disappointed that I wasn't more proactive in suggesting that we talk about both funds in the same article, because they're both presented like that. So.
I had a chance to see the article that's coming out in Workplace, or the Work Life section of the Chronicle on Friday, and it's more balanced in terms of the hardship fund and the care.
Great. I didn't think it was going to move that fast, so, yay.
We keep those pom-poms in the way.
Thank you very much for the update and information. As we move through these reports, you're hearing about the different committees and the different activities, some of the activities that we're involved in. These are all opportunities or potential places that you can serve on and help. So if there's areas that interest you, Linda being in IT, she might look at the communications committee, go hand in hand with that. But she may have enough already on her plate that she wants to move into something a little different. For those of you who may want a little experience with finances, there's the finance committee. So you'll hear about these committees and you'll keep learning about them and start trying to look at a spot that you might want to look into. And you can serve on multiple committees. Some people do. It's all up to how much time you're able to give up. And it's tough to balance a volunteer assignment like the employee assembly with your work life. So whatever you can handle or manage, there's going to be some committees that are going to be actively looking for members because they need to fill the seats. Some members will be stepping down from those committees, and lots of places that you can join. The next committee we have is our personnel policy. It is also led by Pat Mahoney from Geneva. Have you heard any updates? Did she pass anything on? Okay.
I can speak about that just like okay. Good. So one of the first charges when the Employee Assembly was founded was the Employee Assembly is empowered to review personnel and other employee policies at Cornell as an official body of review and submitting and working through in a feedback process with employees to make a change or suggest a change to a policy to senior administration. So this is one of the committees that really fits really core into what the Employee Assembly is all about, that the Employee Assembly can just go and pick almost all policies at the university and say, we'd like to sit this down for a review. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when it gets back to the Education Committee, but this is an important, the Personnel Policy is an important committee where you can get actual hands-on work for the policy review that will influence how the university is run.
Thank you.
I know I should know this, but if someone wanted to know about committees somewhere on our website or someplace, there's a little primer about what each committee does.
Yes, sure is. So we're going to move on to our next committee, and that's the IOC.
Awesome.
Peter Forloff is the head of this committee. Peter, tell us what the acronym IOC is and what you do as the committee.
IOC is the Internal Operations Committee, which is responsible for staffing the assembly and its related committee, although it's been greatly streamlined by the Office of Assemblies, so that's cool. And then the IOC works closely with the Communications Committee on outreach to try to get those staff to help fill the assembly and those committees.
Elections?
Yeah. and positions. For those of you who are here, who are running, you're obviously welcome to come, keep coming here, right, because it's an open meeting, but you're not required to do so until you've won a seat, and the next year starts in June. So that's when the official, you're officially part of the AA and can vote and all that fun stuff. I think, how many, five or six we got?
I believe we have one, two, three.
That put in packets?
Seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have seven applicants.
For how many seats?
And nine.
Okay, for nine seats. Which is good, because that'll actually put us one up from where we were before, right? Or say Steven. But,
those are good apps.
even though there's fewer applicants than available to see, you'll still be running for specific seats.
So their ages work on
that. We actually wanted to discuss that. Since there are fewer people who have submitted materials than there are seats, wanted to put forward an idea of perhaps not holding an election, since all of you who have submitted materials will be seated in the assembly. So really, all the election would determine was who sat in the particular constituency position. Because you run for a seat that's like endowed, exempt, and the vision here is that it would match whatever your job title is, and you'd be focusing on that particular constituency. But since we have a relatively high number, almost everybody is an endowed employee who expressed interest. I think there are more exempt employees than there are exempt slots. So what we're going to try to do is find, you know, partial matches and just put people in all the available seats that way, which is what would happen even if there was an election.
Yeah, so for instance, when I joined the EA 2 years ago, I was a non-exempt endowed employee, and that was the seat I was on, and then now I'm an endowed exempt employee, so I'm not even a fit for my seat right now. And there is effort in the future to look at the membership of the EA and how it is broken up. Do we need these constituent seats split up and divided? Is there a better model of moving forward with our membership? So it really does not make a difference what seat you're on. People shift around all the time. And with that, and I'm going to, Peggy has something to say, I would say I'm in favor of not holding an election, and I can, you'll hear from other people, and then I can go back and explain why.
Now, I was just going to ask that, just kind of off the top of your head, are people okay with that, or do you want a little bit more of, we've been discussing it a lot in the office, and I can provide a little bit more context too if it's helpful.
Does our charter, now we're presenting a charter review as well, but does our existing charter allow for the seating of people like that without an election?
I believe my interpretation is it does.
There is a process for election, and there is also a process for seating people outside of an election, and we would follow that protocol. So that would mean that we would fill endowed exempt seats first with those people, which is what follows in the charter. One of the other factors is, you know, this has a cost savings.
$6,000?
Somewhere between four and six.
Four and six thousand.
I think it's a bad idea. I think that even like in the city, when there's nobody running, when the races are uncontested, you go through the machinations of having an election. And I think that not having an election, we need to be as transparent as possible. And so we're putting out things, we want people to run, then nothing. And it's like, well, whatever happened to that? And I think even when there's no race, that alone says something. Okay, you know, you're keeping the employee assembly, you're keeping the elections at the forefront. And I think there's just something a little gray about not doing an election. I mean, even in the old Soviet Union, when there's only they were voted for one person, they still did it, damn it. And,
always driving the background. Yeah.
I think. Oh, did you finish?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking at it from another side. We're in tough economic times. We're in times where people. I mean, if people want elections, they're going to have to come out and demonstrate that you know, it's too bad there's not 20 people running for 9 seats. But the reality is that there isn't. There's only 7 for 9 seats. So in terms of where we are today, Gary, I'm going to have to dissent and say I think that we should not have the election.
Jason? So I agree with both and would kind of would like to propose a hybrid approach. I really do agree with Gary that the democratic process should be followed because we are a democratic body of sorts. And, you know, you don't want to give the impression of erosion and that, you know, the employee assembly becomes a secret society of, you know, insiders. But on the flip side of the cost savings, I think we could probably do both, if we decided not to have an election, that we supplement it with some really good publicity in the Chronicle and paw prints that explains the situation, that, you know, we've had for several years the employee assembly has not been fully staffed. We now have a large number of seats that are opening up in the EA. We have candidates, but we don't even still have enough candidates to fill. We'll have one seat remaining. And that the reality is that we really want the employee assembly to be a strong body, but we need bodies to be here. And that I think from a publicity angle that we say that, you know, we had a large number of people pick up packets, but a lot of them didn't return. And I personally sent out an email to all of you asking both if you had any questions or concerns. And the people that wrote back to me said, you know, well, on second thought after picking up the packet, you know, something came up in my personal life, I can't do this right now, or my work has increased and has gotten too busy. And these are some of the issues that we always struggle with the EA, is getting your manager's buy-in for you to participate in the employee assembly. And that I try to like to put the spin that in the department should value you leaving a couple times a month for some meetings because you bring back the information from the employee assembly firsthand to your departments. So if they can try to look at it as a perspective of, look, we're not losing you, we're actually gaining more by having you being a representative of this body. And I think if we could explain that in an article and saying, you know, we are not trying to defeat the democratic process whatsoever, but the reality is we have enough applicants that they're all automatically going to be seated, and that, you know, we don't want this situation. We'd like to have more applicants than seats and actually have an election, but we haven't had that situation for many years.
Yeah, and in that same light, I think we need to look internally on how and we've talked about this, on how we do things and what people are seeing. I'd like to hear from new folks sometime about what they think about the process and is it too cumbersome? Are we asking too much for people to run for the employee assembly? And I just think it sends a bad message at a time where people want stability. People want it, even Swofford. Dennis and I had this conversation about should we even be doing this? I'm glad he did it. I think it's good.
And add one thing that when I ran a year ago, I, you know, got the packet just like you did, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this seems daunting and scary, and like, wow, you know, if I have to campaign, I'm gonna go door to door in all of these departments. I really need to get my name out there to win. But when I heard that I was automatically going to be seated on the EA, I didn't go through that work. I didn't go through that effort of trying to reach out to employees. And in some way that was good because I didn't have to take the time and energy to do so. But then it was bad because it didn't force me to go out and meet people in other departments. But the thing is that, you know, and also there's sometimes some people say, well, it's nice to run for something and win an election and then feel like you're seated on here versus, you know, you just got in by default because there were slots. But I am glad that I am on the employee assembly and I value it and cherish it and wish I could get that enthusiasm spread to more employees so that we would have an election.
It's going to be Peter, Dennis, Leon, and I'll take it back.
Even if we don't have the election, we still have to have been ballots for a charter referendum. So, and if we don't have an election, we have a lot fewer people voting on a charter referendum. And then the cost was cited on that, but don't we still have to mail out ballots and do electronic voting on the, that resolution?
Yeah.
Well, one thing.
In response to that, all right.
One of the issues with the election for candidates is because President Scorton's email went out and promised that there would be written and electronic ballots for that election. We feel like the cost is all in the written ballots. Doing an online vote is actually free at this point. We feel that there would have to be written ballots out if there was an election for the employee assembly seats. If it's just a referendum on the charter, because that hasn't been announced yet, we have more flexibility to perhaps only do that in a digital medium.
But if we do that, we're going to go with no votes on that at all. People are just going to ignore that.
I think it would actually be quite a
referendum.
Yeah.
Could we do a hybrid approach where we have a digital referendum and election, and then people that don't have access to do it digitally can request a paper ballot rather than them automatically being sent out? The time frame.
Everyone has the access. Everyone has a net ID.
Yes.
The issue is whether or not they A, have activated it so that they can access email that's sent to their Cornell email address, and then they have that working, and whether they use it regularly so that they will see it. So.
And do we have any idea how many people have sent?
Not really. We don't know who those people are.
Or how many there are.
You know, and we've always wanted to be fair with how we spread our message.
That's you know, kind of the tough thing. I mean, we can take a guess of where pockets of employees are that don't sit at a desk and monitor, you know, a computer 8 hours a day like many of us do, and check email hourly. And you know, we can make some efforts in those areas where people don't have that ready access. But again, that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, going home and checking their email or your webmail. I mean, they might well be, or in the public labs or something. It's a tough one.
Well, what I was getting at is that our
comment I'd like to make is I would like to look at this situation versus last year's situation. Last year, we didn't have sufficient candidates either, did we? Mm-hmm. So we had an election. No, the only thing that's changed the economic environment is
last year we had a competitive employee trustee election, so we needed to issue ballots.
Well, that was
that.
The reason why. Yeah. Okay. So if it had just been in the employee assembly, it would have been a moot point.
Right.
Probably.
Okay.
And so we didn't have the
employee
assembly.
So that's okay. And this year we have referendum. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if you're saying that we went ahead with an uncontested employee assembly election last year because we had to go out with the trustee election anyhow, it seems disingenuous then to say, well, this year we have to go out with the referendum, but we're not going to have the uncontested employee election. But you seem to be saying two different things.
Okay. Leon, I'll take it back and then you want to respond.
Yeah, I do agree with what Dennis just said, and also I agree with Garrett. We're working with the wrong model, and we're going to keep getting the same results every year. So we've got to make some changes. Saying that, however, I mean, what people are focused on is, am I going to have a job tomorrow? I mean, it's not, you know, I'm going to vote for the employee. You know what I'm saying? So what the priority is, I think we have to stay focused on what is on people's minds today, and it's employment. Are they going to have a job? So we can spend the $4,000 or $6,000 or whatever, but in the end, I don't think it's going to make any difference.
I just wanted to comment about the election. I really personally think it's a moot point. I mean, a lot of our employees don't even know an election is available. It's going on. Even when we had the election of the trustee, I had many people come in to me and say, what is this? Tell me what to check off. And you know these people. I don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we did 2 years ago, Paul Prince did an excellent job of saying we've got, as in this case, 7 new applicants. These are the people, the faces. We're welcoming them to the employee assembly. And we did a very nice write-up on everybody that was brought into a new seat that year. And that's what people see. They didn't know there wasn't an election. They didn't know there was supposed to be an election.
And I think that's our fault. I agree, Darren.
We're going to go with Jason, and I'm going to take it back. I will give everybody else. I will make another call to have discussion on this.
I'd like to suggest that we go forward with an electronic referendum and electronic voting, and in connection with the publicity and whatever all the methods we use for publicizing the election to begin with, we will say that if you do not have access in a library or a lab or at home to do this election, you request a paper ballot under the model of absentee voting. And so the onus is on the person. If you're going to vote, just like we vote in our democratic process in the U.S., if you don't want to vote, you just don't show up on election day. But if you know you can't vote for some reason, you request the absentee ballot. It gets sent to you, and we minimize our costs. Okay. I don't think sending a ballot to all of our employees is necessary.
Okay, so the issues here are we have no election. The members are seated. Whether correspondence goes out about them or not, I don't see why it wouldn't. The referendum still moves forward separately. However we decide to do that is another issue. The other scenario is that we do have an election as planned with a referendum. Obviously, we put the two together. And if that's the scenario that you're thinking, and we can still have more discussion, we have time, can the election be electronic only with a hybrid mix possibly? But the decision is, do we have an election? We can work out how we have the election at a later date or later on, but it's either no election or election. And I know that electronically, these HR representatives and these managers and supervisors, it is their task, it's their responsibility to spread the messages they get to everyone else in their workforce. So I'm not saying that that always happens, and we want to make sure we reach everybody. President Squirtin sent the email. He sent it out with the idea of us saving $6,000 to not have a paper ballot election. I guarantee we could pull his office in to get a support to send other correspondents out if needed, if that's an idea. So that's how I feel. I feel that the last year's election, I did not like how it went. I understand why we had it. These are members that, what were there, 4 or 5? Let's 5 employees up for EA elections. They know they're getting seated. One wins. That was Leon. Everyone else now feels, did anyone say, oh, sorry, you lost?
No.
Leon was announced the winner, and in some eyes, the other...
And I declined.
The other people who ran not win.
For the record, Potter did not call it losers.
For the record, right.
No, I call it losers.
Those are the scenarios. I don't know if anyone feels there's different scenarios there, but those are them. We have an election, we don't have an election. And if we have an election, how do we hold it? So I think the two issues are election or no election. Yes.
And also, what would the difference be? What's the value added to have an election? It's going to be the same results, isn't it? So why waste the time and effort in?
Well, you have the other aspects of having an election that Gary pointed out. So, that's the decisions we have to think about here. Peter,
If we did get the president's blessing, like you suggested, I think it would make it a lot easier. And us right now, we're worried about making the president mad about not sending a paper ballot. But if he said, "Oh, it's a great idea, we'll save a lot of money," and he, blesses it, then I'll make it. Ruin that stress from us, I think.
Well,
and if we don't have an election, we should pretty much forget about the referendum too, because who's going to click on the email just to vote on the referendum?
I think it's not about what offending the president or something like that. It's just that information has gone out there, and dealing with the perception.
If he sends another email saying, in the light of the economic situation, give a blessing of public you know, be a public blessing to do an electronic only with paper ballots or something.
Although we can't speak for his office, but
no, I think that would probably come from our office at that point.
Like or somebody. Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of details, so I don't want to just say, oh yeah, sure, we'll do that. I think we need to talk through some more things and vet it with a group. I guess, what do you think about the possibility, sort of in broad terms, of us having the option for people to contact our office to have a ballot sent to them individually, but having our primary means of encouraging people to vote to be electronic?
Just as he mentioned.
Yeah.
The election.
How do people feel about that? I haven't really heard anybody move anything, so I don't think we have a motion on the table.
No, we didn't.
It's still discussion.
So I guess a follow-up to that, I'm wondering is, would that be just an election, or would it be the election and the referendum and do it all at once with the option of requesting? And I guess I had the same question. How do people feel about that?
That sounds good.
Not to me. I don't think it's necessary.
But still, the two issues are election or no election. Referendum is different. Obviously, if there's an election, the referendum goes with it. If there's not an election, the referendum is still going out. Yes, Dennis?
I guess I echo some opinions of some of what I've heard. I just don't see that there's going to be sufficient interest in a referendum, a standalone referendum.
Yeah.
Because I think there'll be less interest in a referendum than there is even in the elections. The elections at least involve people and faces. The referendum involves concepts and language change that might not be considered that important to employees right now, considering the crisis we're in. So I'm concerned, particularly if there's a certain level of response that needs to be achieved to cause the referendum to be considered a success and to then successfully put those in. So I think if you're going to have a referendum, then you couple it with the elections. I'm concerned about the tradition here. Last year we coupled elections with insufficient candidates to another election, which was the employee elected trustee. And then we went out with that. This year we have the same option to do that, couple an election with insufficient candidates to another election, which are going on. I think that's the way, my own feeling is that's the way to go, since that's what the history shows it was done last year. And it seems inconsistent, and then there would need to be some overriding explanation of why it was done differently this year than last year. That's the tradition.
Thank you, Dennis. It's going to go to Jason and then
So I'd like to, I agree with you, Dennis. I think I would strongly encourage us to proceed with the elections, because we have to have our employees being used to being involved in the election process every year around this time. It's part of the democratic process. It's part of the tradition. And we don't want to do something to start to erode that. Because maybe next year we are going to have a big issue and we're going to have several more seats on there. We want to make sure people start to avoid the things that Inda talked about. Well, what is this election? I never heard about this. Well, if you know that every spring there are employee assembly elections, I think we do have a very important, the referendum. We should do the elections because of the democratic and tradition. We also have the president's message that if we change anything, we have to have his buy-in, because it was his word that went out there that said there's going to be an election. And to backpedal on that is not going to look good in his eyes. He has to support any type of change at this point. So my thing is, I'd like to recommend that we proceed with the election electronically with an absentee request ballot.
So that's a form of
a motion.
A motion.
I move that we proceed with the elections as intended, electronically primary, with absentee paper ballot by request to the Office of Assemblies and or applicable offices.
I'll second.
I second. What's your discussion, Bill?
The only thing I didn't hear in that, and I think you probably intended it, but let's make sure, is that it would be the elections for the employees and the referendum.
Yeah.
So that would be a friendly amendment?
Yes.
I'll second the amendment.
I have a second. Any other discussion?
How do I know how to request the ballot? I'm How am I hearing about this?
The same places we're going to publicizing the...
Well, I can't propose an amendment myself, but just as a suggestion in case anybody else wants to. if the executive committee could be delegated, empowered to approve a plan for doing that, I can think of a bunch of things we can do. There are a number of contexts, particularly for employees who are not plugged into the electronic communications.
Okay.
And
I'll amend as proposed by Ari.
There's a motion.
Second.
And amend. Second. Okay. Keep discussion open. Leon?
Yeah, I think this is a mistake. I think we're going to have to really, because I see the same thing happening year after year. I think we're going to have to come up, and I think it's on us and not the employees on the receiving end. I think we have to come up with a new model, and I think this is a waste of time, money, and effort. And I think the president would, I think he would be happy to hear that we're going to save $4,000-$6,000 by not doing this.
We will continue to save a significant amount of money if we don't have to mass produce
the paper
85,000. Pieces of paper per ballot. There will be a cost savings by using a primarily electronic means and on demand, which, if I could also add, Brian?
Yes.
Sorry. This is also consistent with the paperless initiative, where the goal is to reduce paper by 50%. You know, paper doesn't go away, paper is reduced, and that this would be totally consistent with that as well. So there is a cost savings there. I just want to be clear for that.
Okay.
Leon?
I've heard a few times talk on the referendum and the revision of the charter that maybe that doesn't have to be voted on. But I think from a charter standpoint, we have to do that no matter what, don't we? If we have to do that no matter what, then adding the election on, if it's going to be electronic, it's not going to cost anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so it's not a matter of let's not do election. I think we're still going to have to do something anyway with the referendum. Is that correct? Or?
Yes. There's no specific requirements specified right now about referenda, so we have more flexibility, say we were just going to do it electronically and not have paper ballots,
but we
haven't really been thinking in the context of, well, you could have paper ballots on demand that people could get by campus mail. I actually think that that's a good compromise, because it's our understanding that the number of employees who would only vote by paper are a relatively small group of people, and this would still provide a means for them to vote without producing thousands of ballots and going through the mass mailing and all the costs associated with that.
Sure, Bill?
Okay, but in relation to that, though, the one point I'm still trying to get across is how you vote for the referendum is not specifically specified, but you have to have a vote on the referendum.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
If we have to have that vote, then just throw the elections in with it.
Well, we have
discussed
is if the referendum doesn't have the specified amount of turnout, well, we can cross that bridge when we get there.
Right.
Our effort is to be consistent with the charter, and that's what the charter dictates. And we are thinking ahead to the what if we don't get the percentage that's specified in the charter.
Yeah.
And that will be consultation with probably council's office to see what we might do in lieu of that to pass the charter.
We're thinking about it.
We feel we need to go through process and let the process either succeed or fail before we start thinking otherwise on that.
Okay, I'm going to take two more, and then I'm going to recap the motion that's presented before us. And if you really have to, I'm not going to turn anyone away, then you can bring it up. I'm going to go with Dennis. And then Bill.
Okay, I just have a quick question for Katie, and that is, Katie, what is that number? What's the magic number?
20%,
Charlie? Yeah, so about 2,000 employees.
It's not going to happen.
That's what we're looking for, and I think, where were we last year?
1,100.
About half of what we were looking for.
It's not going to happen.
That's why we're kind of anticipating that we may not, but who knows, maybe electronic responses may increase the vote sometimes. We saw that in the students.
Okay, Bill?
Well, again, just going back, and I know I'm stressing the same point, but I keep hearing a little bit of variations on it. That, yeah, there's this issue of maybe we won't get the percentage, but what I heard again is we still have to do the. We need to go through the process, then you'll come over, we'll get over that bridge. And so, again, if we need to go through that process for the referendum, let's do that electronically and let's throw the elections on it. It's not going to cost anything. You still get, you know, you still get the process in there. We can still promote it highly. I think that's the deal. Anyway.
Or to give it to what's your question?
How were people made aware of the elections only by President Scorton's email? Is that the only way? Like all these people who don't have access to a computer on a daily basis, how are they made aware of the Cochrane?
Cochrane flash.
The only point that I'm trying to make is
Chronicle did some work, word of mouth, this group.
Can a paper ballot be included in the file print?
It's still the cost of printing.
I'd be open to that, and then we get the word out that people don't have to request a ballot. If they want a ballot, the ballot is there for them. That way you save your office having to mail ballots out, and there would have to be some sort of mechanism so you couldn't have ballot stuffing.
Right. We have to have some checks to make sure people aren't.
And that idea. I'd be open to that idea if the Office of Assembly felt that there was some safeguards to prevent ballot stuffing.
Right. And we're going to take Leon. I'm going to recap what I have. And if there's anybody that still wants to discuss this, we can do that. Otherwise, I'm going to bring it forward for a vote. Okay?
Yeah, the only point I want to emphasize is let's do something between now and next election time to avoid all of this, because we go through this every year. It's crazy. We need to make some changes and a new model to work from.
Yes,
that's all I want to say.
Everything is set in place for that charge to happen, Leon. Okay, this is what I have. We move forward. This is the motion. We have elections electronically as our main primary way of having them. Included with the elections, electronic elections, we have our vote on our referendum. With the option of paper ballots requested on demand or via paw print paper ballots or any other ideas that can come up that will be delegated to the executive committee to come up with those ideas. Obviously, the executive committee would take input from others as we move forward. That's what I have for a motion, am I correct?
Yes.
Do we have any other discussion on that? Anything needs to be cleared up? We do have time. This is, for everyone else, this is abnormal that we have this much time on discussion. Yes.
Can I ask any of our guests, do they have any other questions or perceptions or feedback that might help our body make this decision?
I would just say that in my department, dealing a lot with the budget cuts, I think the idea of going for electronically is a really great one, and I think that you should advertise the heck out of that and say how much you're saving, because I think that's really important to people who are worried about their jobs. I mean, I don't know where other departments are, but we've had our layoffs, so I think it would be great to be able to bring back to my people is to say, you know, they're going to do this way so that there's a cost.
Good idea.
Yeah, I use the same way as you mentioned about the cost and saving of not going to the ballot paper applications, but with the electronically.
And the as needed paper ballots, which would be a lot less.
And I think another aspect of that motion was the unresolved details could be
So I have a motion, and I have a second. Does anybody need me to recap it again? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Is one? Any abstainers? Zero. Okay, we will, it's passed, the motion is passed. We will move forward with having elections electronically, including the referendum for our charter. Paper ballots will be available on demand, possibly through paw print and other means for getting a paper ballot out there that is delegated in other parts of making this happen, delegated to the executive committee, as noted.
Cool.
Okay. Any comments about? Yes,
ma'am. If the 20% is not reached, what happens?
I think the first thing we need to do is talk to council's office.
Okay.
See what they suggest.
And to explain that when a change happens on.
All the more reason to review our charter. Now, the irony is not lost here that we are reviewing and updating a charter to be more relevant and significant, and this is why, because it's hard to do that. So.
Right.
But we will work through that, and I'm sure we'll be successful ultimately.
Right. In the past, changes on our charter, we need a referendum, which is different than a resolution. Referendum, we need 20% of all employees to vote, the turnout to vote on passing. And if not, then we have to take it to the council office.
And one of the changes in the charter is to remove that requirement in connection with other assemblies on campus. It's not funny. It's to remove that burden that this is the last assembly, correct, that has that type of structure. And we're
unfortunately, the university assembly has it too, and there is a referendum of the entire campus community. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Are they working on changing that?
Essentially,
you know, that we ultimately report to the president of the university. Anything that goes through has his stamp of approval too. So it's not like you're going to get a runaway employee assembly 5 years from now that's going to radically change its charter. That's not going to have the approval of the president, because we're all ultimately accountable to the president. So.
Okay.
In the future, it'll allow us to amend our charter easier than this type of referendum system.
Great. Okay, we got through that. And I have a question. We're still on IOC with Peter. At this point, are we accepting any further applications, or do we have our seven?
We have two other vacancies. They are 1 year. We've had nine vacancies, okay? A couple carried over from this year. So the seven people who have come forward will be seated in the seven positions that are 2 year positions.
Yes.
We still have two vacancies that are just 1 year terms that will complete the unexpired term. And this will help keep the assembly not turning over the whole assembly at the
actually
same time.
I have a recommendation on that. Practically, those positions can be filled by the assembly by appointment.
Right.
And because future changes to the list of candidates, especially since we're moving ahead with the election,
right,
will complicate logistically, you know, getting materials ready and things like that. And since the deadline has passed for materials, would be my recommendation that the assembly not extend the deadline for materials at this point. Because
I was just making sure there wasn't an extension already out there. So, to give you the news, yes, you will be seated on the EA. There will be an election, so you will. Your name will be out there. And there will be no chance of other interested people serving on the employee assembly to join this election to possibly make you lose your seat. You will have a seat. And what happens is, if others are still interested, the deadline's over, the employee assembly can vote to appoint that person on the EDR. But there will be still two more vacant seats of 1 year.
So
okay.
If you know anybody,
yeah.
It would be really nice to have a fully staffed employee assembly.
Bill? Okay. Anything else, Peter?
No, it sounds good to me.
Office of Assemblies, Peter, everyone else, great job. Let's move on to university benefits.
Julie's not here, but I believe that that's a university-wide committee that has been suspended or on hiatus due to the economic situation, so there obviously would be nothing to report.
Okay, Jason's going to keep it. He chairs the Employee Education Committee.
Really brief, that basically this committee just reviews the education benefits that are offered to employees, and we are just getting that committee started up again, and hopefully we will sit down with some education benefits soon and start doing a policy review.
The committee does not offer any new ideas for benefits?
There are some
so it's not
ideas on the table right now, but we're going to start by reviewing the existing policy and then build that with our ideas to form a formal recommendation that will come before this body for approval to send to the president.
Any questions for Jason and the Education Committee? Okay, we're going to move on. This is what I mentioned earlier in the report from the chair. There was an ad hoc committee assembled and charged, and it was regarding our charter review. And do we have anything, any updates from this committee? That would be Pat.
No.
Okay. Nothing to report. We approved it unanimously. It's going out in a referendum. Details to follow. Okay, now we're going to move on to old business. Is there any old business that we need to talk about, recap? Okay. New business.
Just our next meeting looks pretty action-packed for our newcomers. That you won't be seated members at our next meeting, but just to point out that our next meeting, President Scorton and Mary George Opperman will be attending, and those are usually some really fun meetings because you get to hear direct from the top what's going on. I'm sure President Scorton will give us another financial update on what's been going on financially with the university, the bond sale that, you know, sold out like crazy. So we'll probably get some really good information with that. So invite you to attend that meeting if you can.
Okay. And the best way of serving, it's 2 weeks to the 15th. And the best way to serve, I feel the best way to be an effective employee assembly member is to learn and learn and learn and learn and learn and be exposed to as much of what the campus can give us so you can effectively help other employees. You can give them information, you can give them feedback, you can point them in the direction to get their answers. So the more we learn, the stronger we are as employees and the better leadership that we can give. Okay, we're going to move to open forum. Anybody have anything that they would like to talk about? Dennis?
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'd like to bring everybody's attention. A new series is starting up at Sage Chapel tomorrow. It's following on the successful Soup and Hope series. It's called The Spirit of Sustainability. It's 5 Thursdays in April. April is Cornell Sustainability Month. 5 speakers will be thinking about why sustainability is important to them. This is employees, fellow employees, some faculty members, and a couple of executives talking about Cornell's climate action plan, which is to reduce carbon emissions, to achieve carbon neutrality in another 40 years down the pike, and what Cornell is doing now to be able to reduce its carbon emissions and its general cost-saving efforts. And the first one up tomorrow is The Urge to Conserve, Why Saving Energy is Everybody's Business by Lanny Joyce. Lanny's an engineer. If you haven't met Lanny, he's one of the most enthusiastic engineers I've ever met, who gets very excited about conserving energy, and there's some light lunch that's available, and some music. So plans come from 12 to 1, that's tomorrow at Sage Chapel, and every Thursday now following in April. Thanks.
Lanny was the primary visionary behind Lake Source Cooling, and even though that's gotten beaten up over the years internally, it's won every environmental, international, and national award that there is, but mythic I get kicked around. And when I was down at the newspaper, people, and even here, people would say, oh, this guy at Lake Source Cooling, you know, who is this person? This guy's like one of the most ethical people I've ever met here at Cornell. He's just a wonderful guy, and he's got a lot to say, and he's done some world-class stuff. So that's like at noon, Dennis?
At noon, yeah.
At noon.
The notice when the food starts and the music starts, and then at about 12:15 is when the speaker party starts. So come down. You haven't been in Sage Chapel lately. It's a wonderful spot, and it's great just to get to come there for an hour and sort of get out of the rest of your work life.
Is this a bring your own bowl thing again, too?
It's not bring your own bowl. It's not soup. They're not serving soup. They're serving mini sandwiches and mini brownies, some fruit and beverages. So it's all waste your time.
When is the next paw print out?
Well, that's a good question, Brian. Depends on whether the paw print is funny enough this year or not.
Might be the
Mark is funny enough.
It'll be out on the 16th, but I had a previous conversation with Ari regarding the need to get out any information about the employee elections. And since the 16th, voting will already have started on the 16th, what I offered was to come out with a special election paw print next week prior to the beginning of voting to get out word on the referendum.
Will it replace the article of the 16th?
Would not replace it, no. It would be in addition to. It would come out on whatever that will be. What would that be? It's going to be the 9th?
So chapter 7.
9th, and then we'll go again on the 16th.
Okay.
So we've got to sort of stick to our publishing schedule. This would be like a special edition. So that would give the executive committee until middle of next week to figure out how we want to then go ahead with the voting, because I can incorporate that into that special edition of Poverty next week. Would that work?
The special meeting is more
printing. It's more printing for ballots, but if you could. I'm sure, and that's what that was very good. His people are very good at pulling out some good, other good information out of that ballot.
But I need to know for sure if that's what you want to do. If that's what the group wants to do, I'll plan on that, or if that can be decided by the executive committee.
We probably check tomorrow. Yeah.
The executive committee was delegated to do that with
the
motion.
And that'll be soon?
I would say, Peter, if you could, or Ari, but let's see who's going to do it, push out an email. The exact group, see if we can start this through email.
Well, we usually have our exec meetings on the off Thursdays. We can push this tomorrow instead.
Do we have a meeting tomorrow?
We don't.
That's why I looked at it through email.
Well, I'm saying okay. We can schedule a meeting tomorrow instead of next Thursday like we normally would, unless a lot of people would rather go to the event.
My schedule is, why don't you try send an email? Maybe we can meet tomorrow. We'd have to make sure room's available and Gary Stewart's available.
That's really important.
Okay.
I think we could probably do this by email. I'm just saying we might not have all the answers tomorrow by the time of the meeting, so.
But we can know enough to let Dennis know.
Okay.
I don't have to have all the answers. I just need to know if you need that special edition.
So you can start planning.
Yeah, so I can start planning.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. Couldn't you guys just move the election dates by a week and then just publish in the regular conference?
No.
I don't know how. No.
I don't think we can push the election dates up or back.
By a week.
Has there been any publicity on them?
Yeah.
The president's email.
President's email is in the conference.
Yeah.
Without on conference flash, without on something else.
No, our
conference flash did chronicle on something private.
I don't read that. I only read your paper, Dennis.
There's nothing in the charter.
Well,
okay.
Now, go ahead.
I just want to make an announcement, kind of similar to Dennis's, that this month is the 40th anniversary of the Millen Strait Hall takeover that occurred in 1969, and it was a significant event in Cornell's history, and there are a number of programs and activities that are available to open to students and faculty. Most of them are in the desk calendar, but I just wanted to mention that this body ultimately grew out of what happened 40 years ago, among other things. So it was relevant in terms of being in a representative group. So I mentioned that.
That's a real good tie-in to the election, to the last issue.
So, is by June, or pardon me, is the 48th anniversary will be organized by students
The AFRICOM Center is doing a lot of the programs and organizations, and I know there's a film that's being shown on the, I want to say the 19th, that was actually produced 20 years ago about the takeover on the 20th anniversary. So they are doing most of the organization, but Bob Harris has been involved with this, I know, and I'm trying to think of others off the top of my head. Most of the events are in the university events calendar that you can access at cornell.edu.
Outstanding. Anything else? Okay. We'll adjourn.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.